Hello, and thank you for joining me for the Mark and Aceto podcast. My name is Mark and Aceto, and today we're going to do the first part of a three-part episode of the history and music part of the series I'm working on. We're going to do 1965, and 1965 was a very, very busy year in music. Very interesting year, how it changed, how things progressed. It's so gonna be so informative. And then the information I gathered up is like 21 pages long so far. I'm still working on it actually, so I got the first part down pat already, so that's gonna be done now, of course, the first part. And next week I'll have part two, then I'll do part three the week after that. I promise that. So without further ado, let's get started. Part one, a history of music in 1965. So before we start, I know this is the proper way of doing this on a podcast episode, but I'm going to do it like this and hope for the best. If you know of any other ways, please contact me through my email, which I never gave away my email before, but I'm going to do that after this episode's over. I'll give away my email address and my Facebook page. Well, my Facebook page is basic. Just type my name in, Mark and Aceto, capital M-A-R-K, capital I-N-N-A-C-I-T-O. I gave you some feedback. I appreciate the feedback. I would like to know how I'm doing. I'd like to know what can I make this podcast better, what can I, you know, things that went wrong. I'm not going to improve. I'm still kind of new to this podcast thing, even though it's going to be a year here pretty soon. I did my first episode. But I like to know how I'm doing. I like to, you know, give me some advice, you know. But give me some advice, too, on how I should cite my sources. So this is all the sources I'm using for this whole complete three-part episode of 1965 here. I got a list of sources here that I'm going to read off here. I'm going to do it right now, so I can, you know, get out of the way. Does it matter? Is this the way to do sources in the podcast? Okay, here we go. So I used an article on guitarworld.com. I used a website called the BeatlesBible.com. I used a music blog called GaslightRecords.com. I used a book, Hippie, by Barry Miles, published in 2003. I use another book called 1965, The Most Revolutionary Year in Music, by Andrew Grant Jackson, published in 2015. I took segments from the Netflix documentary Echoes in the Canyon from 2018. I got my sources from a book called Psychedelia, 101 Iconic Underground Rock Albums. Written by Richard Morton Jack from 2017. From another book I have called The Beatles Anthology from 2000. It's basically nothing but interviews with the Beatles. Like, their interviews, comments, quotes, and their own words. And I use an article from LAMag.com. And that's it. So let's get started. This first part is going to be like an essay format, because I wrote this in like an essay form. So if I read it like an essay, I apologize. But honestly, it doesn't really matter how I read it. I don't know. But I'm going to read it like I'm reading an essay. Again, before I get started, I wanted to mention this right here. In the episode of 1964, I didn't mention the Yardbirds album that year. The British band Yardbirds released the album in 1964, called Five Live Yardbirds. It was obviously a live album, Five Live Yardbirds. At the opening of the album, the guy introduces the band one by one. And as he introduces Eric Clapton, he says, "Lead guitar, Eric Slowhand Clapton." Slowhand became a title of one of Eric Clapton's solo albums in 1977. It had hits such as Cocaine, Lay Down Sally, and Wonderful Tonight, one of his best albums, actually, so it was kind of interesting there, I guess, a nickname that he acquired, but yeah, I want to share that. There you go, 1965. In 1965, a chain reaction of bands began forming in Los Angeles and living in Laurel Canyon, the Hollywood Hills. Majority of the bands blended a combination of folk and rock, which became the birth of the folk rock sound, which also was commonly called the California sound. Bands such as the Byrds, Mamas and Papas, and Buffalo Springfield were among the few of the early incarnations of the California sound. You could probably thank the Beatles for perhaps influencing the California sound. It started on the Beatles' first visit to America in New York in February of 1964. Tom Petty mentioned it in the Netflix documentary Echoes in the Canyon. The incident goes as follows. John, Paul, and Ringo were at a Central Park for a photo shoot while George stayed behind, who had the flu. The actual owner of the Rickenbacker Guitar Company personally delivered a second 12-string guitar that Rickenbacker made. He intended on giving it to John Lennon because John played a Rickenbacker. With George present in the room, he took it and gladly accepted it. An article on GuitarWorld.com titled "The Beatles' Secret Weapon, George Harrison's 1963 Rickenbacker 360-12," written by Damian Finelli, published in 2017, stated that all four Beatles were present in the room during the intended meeting with Rickenbacker's president, Francis C. Hall. John Lennon tried the guitar out but thought it would be a better fit for George. George was in bed with the flu but got to see it later on and fell in love with it. So the question is, what does a 12-string guitar have to do with folk rock? Well, one of the first bands that started the whole folk California sound, whatever, the leader played a 12-string guitar. The Byrds were formed in Los Angeles in 1964. Lead guitarist Roger McGuinn was living in New York, and after hearing "I Want to Hold Her Hand" by the Beatles, he noticed the opening riff had folk music chord changes. He ended up playing it at the New York Folk Club, the Cafe Playhouse in Greenwich Village. McGuinn did not play it with an acoustic guitar, but instead played it with an electric guitar, a Gibson 12-string. It didn't go too well with audiences, and Roger ended up having a gig at the popular Los Angeles club, the Troubadour. When Roger got to Los Angeles, he noticed that folk singer Hoyt Axton was doing the same thing, playing folk songs on electric guitar. It didn't go well either in Los Angeles. You know, crowds didn't like it at all. You know, they didn't want to hear folk on electric guitars. That was when Roger met Gene Clark and guitarist David Crosby and formed the Byrds, along with bassist Chris Hillman and drummer Michael Clark. When the Byrds went to England for the first time, they found out they were America's answer to the Beatles. They became friends with the Beatles after the Beatles caught an act of theirs. You could definitely hear the Beatles' influence in the Byrds' music as well. After the Byrds' popularity, this led to a chain reaction of other bands coming to Los Angeles. Husband and wife musicians John and Michelle Phillips had been living in New York. They knew Roger McGuinn, and after the Byrds gained popularity on the radio, John and Michelle moved to Los Angeles, along with Canadian Denny Doherty and Mama Cass Elliott, and formed Mamas and Papas. The Byrds may have been the first band with a folk rock sound coming out of Los Angeles, but they were not the first band to come out of California. The Beach Boys were formed in Hawthorne, California in 1961. The thing that set them apart from the Byrds and Mamas and Papas was the fact that they had more of a surf rock sound to their music. Many will say that the Beach Boys started the whole California sound, but doing it with the songs about surfing and cruising. The song "In My Room" from 1963 was perhaps one of the best Brian Wilson compositions and had nothing to do with surfing. One of the Beach Boys' hits from 1966 inspired another Los Angeles-based band hit from 1967. The Turtles came out of Los Angeles in 1965 and doing the whole folk rock thing as well. Their first record was a cover of Bob Dylan's "It Ain't Me, Babe." Their two lead singers went by the alter ego Flo and Eddie, Mark Volman, Flo, and Howard Kalin, Eddie. After the release of the Beach Boys' 1966 hit "Good Vibrations," the Turtles came out with the 1967 hit "Happy Together." "Happy Together" was a hit record that shouldn't have been. Forgive me for not remembering the source The information that I gathered claimed that the opening of Happy Together had some similarities with the opening of Good Vibrations. Denise Sullivan of AllMusic dubbed Happy Together as a serious Beatles Beach Boys conceptual pop. One band that was not formed in California acquired the folk rock sound had a passion for the direction Brian Wilson was going in 1965. 11 Spoonful were formed in New York City in 1965 by primary songwriter John Sebastian. He caught Roger McGuinn playing I Wanna Hold Your Hand. Excuse me. He liked that he had been doing the whole folk rock with the electric guitar, but he got a lot of criticism for it. Sebastian was also close friends with producer Felix Popularity, who also was a bass guitarist for the band Mountain, who had the 1970 hit Mississippi Queen. Popularity showed Sebastian the Bach-like qualities that Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys were doing in their music around 1965. It was something that Sebastian fell in love with. When 11 Spoonful arrived in California, John Sebastian was blown away with how spotless the recording studios were as opposed to New York City. Bands like the Turtles and 11 Spoonful tended to have what people called a sunshine pop type of sound. The Association were formed in Los Angeles and was another band who electrified folk songs and had that sunshine pop influence as well. One of the members of the band was Filipino, Larry Ramos. Ramos started his career playing with a folk group, the New Christy Minstrels. Excuse me. If the term sunshine pop is in the dictionary, a picture of this band would be a definition stating, see them. They can't talk. The Monkees, a band that was considered a joke by many, were formed in Los Angeles in 1966, and they sort of had a folk rock influence in their sound. They were formed mostly for their television series, but just decided to record professionally as well after that period when the TV show got started. The band consisted of vocalist Davy Jones, a native of Openshaw, Manchester, England, guitarist, vocalist Mike Naismith, bass guitarist Peter Tork, and vocalist, drummer Mickey Dillons. The Monkees are all right, you know. I like the Monkees, you know. I don't hate them. You know, they were a band I kind of made fun of because they seemed kind of nerdy, like, in a way. But, you know, they were a good band. My favorite member, I think, of the Monkees is Mike Naismith. He was the one who always wore, the beanie or the stocking cap, whatever it's called. And pictures and stuff you see of them. You know, he was the one that always wore that beanie. That stocking cap, knitted cap, whatever it was. He's from Texas originally and had a country influence too as well. A lot of his solo work was had some country rock influence to it. But anyway, going back. Most of the bands were friends with each other and it was no surprise. The one known fact that the Monkees knew of this next band was that the Monkees bassist Peter Tork introduced them at the Monterey Pop Festival in June of 1967. In my opinion, it was the most humbling introductions I heard, honestly. Buffalo Springfield were formed in Los Angeles in 1966. The band consisted of three Canadians, Neil Young, vocalist and lead guitar, Bruce Palmer, bass guitar, and Dewey Martin, drums. A native of Dallas, Texas, vocalist, guitarist Stephen Stills, and a native of Yellow Springs, Ohio, vocalist, guitarist Richie Furry. Another interesting story about Buffalo Springfield, Richie Furry was actually, I think he's retired now. I read he was retired, but he was a pastor living in Colorado, here in Colorado. And I actually caught one of his sermons a couple years ago on Easter. I think it was Easter 2015. I caught a sermon, really good sermon, really inspiring, very Bible-believing, very, very good. Music was very awesome. Music was like kind of had a bluegrass feel to it, which makes sense for Richie Furry's influence. But yeah, I saw Richie Furry preaching the message one Easter Sunday. Good pastor. Anyway. According to the article, halfway between Watts and Charles Manson, local idol Arthur Lee, written by Matthew Durston on the LAMag.com website, Neil Young once commented about this next band in an interview with Jimmy McDonough, saying that they were pretty out there. They were just bad enough and fucked up enough to make fun of, but they were so good too. The band was called Love. They were a multiracial band and formed in Los Angeles and consisted of folk elements in their music. Two of the members were African American. Leader and primary songwriter Arthur Lee and lead guitarist Johnny Echoes. Arthur Lee was considered more of a punk rather than a hippie, which also was in the LA Mag article, and it was what David Andrew Lee mentioned. He was a A&R scout for Elektra Records, which Elektra Records was the company that Love played on. His iconic red rectangular sunglasses and style of fashion was a statement. Before anyone heard of Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix, Arthur Lee purchased a house for the band to commune in. It was a castle located in Los Feliz area of Los Angeles. The band's first two album covers were shot outside of the castle. Most every band I mentioned included psychedelic elements in the music as well. Early elements of what inspired psychedelic music was called garage rock, which also was evident in some of the band's music. The band Love had a proto-punk classic in 1966 called 7 and 7 as it had garage rock written all over it. Two other bands that were formed in Los Angeles were more psychedelic and garage rock rather than folky. The Doors were a psychedelic band which contained dark lyrics composed by lead singer Jim Morrison. The Doors did not have a bass guitarist, but when Ray Manzarek hits the lower notes on the organ, it became a fine replacement. The Seeds were a garage rock psychedelic band that were formed in Los Angeles and were fronted by primary songwriter Sky Saxon. Two of their biggest hits were Can't Seem to Make You Mine and Pushing Too Hard. Due to the fact of stating the garage rock genre, I feel it is safe to talk about the garage rock style next, often referred to as 60s punk. The influence of came from the British Invasion sound. Bands mostly performed out of the United States and Canada, and the rock and roll that they put had a raw and energetic sound. The style was characterized by basic guitar chord structures played and other instruments, sometimes distorted through a fuzz box, and included unsophisticated and occasionally aggressive lyrics and delivery. The name derives from the perception that groups were made up of young amateurs playing in the family garage. 1965 also saw what was to become the psychedelic period. It gave the chance for garage rock bands to incorporate exotic elements into the genre's primitive stylistic framework. One of the earliest bands that had a garage rock sound that were formed early and had a couple hits on the radio that made airplay on the radio with the Bull Bermeos. Their 1964 hit Laugh Laugh was considered garage rock, and their follow-up Just a Little, released in March of 1965. According to journalist Richie Unterberger, the Bull Bermeos were the first American group to pose a successful response to the British invasion. Sam and Shamna Faro's scored the hit Wooly Bully in 1965, that peaked at number two. A year later, they scored the hit Little Red Riding Hood. Minnesota's The Castaways released a 1965 hit Liar Liar, and it was just shy of reaching the top 10. The Sandales' biggest hit, Dirty Water, was a garage rock anthem which pays an ode to the city of Boston, was issued in November of 1965. Paul Revere and the Raiders gained success in 1965 with the song Steppin' Out. Their follow-up was even a bigger hit, Just Like Me, from November of 1965. Between 1964 and 1965, other bands began forming whose music had been considered as garage rock. The Count Five reached number five in 1966 with their hit Psychotic Reaction. Question Mark and the Mysterians scored the organ-driven 1966 hit 96 Tears, music critic and editor David Marsh once described as a performance of Question Mark and Miss Simmons as a landmark of landmark explosion of punk rock. The Barbarians had a band from Cape Cod who donned themselves with sandals and longer hair than the Beatles, recorded a 1965 song, Are You a Boy or Are You a Girl? Another band from Boston, The Remains, released their classic self-titled album in 1966 and toured with the Beatles. Formed in Bristol, Connecticut in 1965, the Squires released only one record that became a garage rock classic in 1966 called Going All the Way. The Blues Magoos were formed in the Bronx, New York, and known for their 1966 hit We Ain't Got Nothing Yet, which was featured on their 1966 album Psychedelic Lollipop. Besides the Seeds, other California garage rock acts included were the Chocolate Watchman and the Leaves. The Leaves scored a 1965 hit with a version of Hey Joe. The Music Machine, another popular act in California, and lead singer Sean Bonnewell had the hit Talk Talk from 1966. The Electric Prunes scored a 1966 garage rock anthem called I Had Too Much to Dream Last Night, a song that was known for the Fuzzbox guitar intro that sounded like a buzzing bee. It's pretty interesting. Chicago's The Shadows of Nights took their influence from British bands The Rolling Stones, The Pretty Things, and The Yardbirds. They were known to have more of a tough, hard-driving approach when it came to the sound of their music. Formed in 1965 in Austin, Texas, by Rocky Erickson, the 13th Floor Elevators scored the 1966 hit, the garage rock classic, You're Gonna Miss Me. The song was featured on their first album, 1966, The Psychedelic Sounds of the 13th Floor Elevators. The album was produced by Leland Rogers, the brother of Kenny Rogers. In the period of between 1965 and 1969, bands from Britain, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York was influencing each other's work that inspired for these acts to mimic their styles and give new ideas that the albums that were coming out left and right with these ideas. I mean, they were releasing album after album, all these bands, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, the Birds, the Beach Boys, and they were influencing each other's work. And I think it started before 1965. I think 1964, when the Beatles came out, I think a lot of other British acts came out and wanted to be like them. Of course, doing their own style, but doing some similarities too as well with that. And that's all I have in this episode. That's all I have here. Excuse me. Sorry. I'm getting distracted by the wind outside. I think that's what's distracting me. I keep hearing this bump on the window. But anyway, thank you for tuning in. I hope this was inspiring. Next week is going to be part two of this 1965 episode. It's going to be between January through June. So, I promise next week. Thank you. Before I go, I'm going to give you my email address. My email address is markrocks, that's capital MARKROCKS 77 at gmail.com. I appreciate feedback. If you listen to this, give me some feedback. If you want to, if you like it, if any ideas you can make me, have me, I can do to make this better, please tell me. Thank you. God bless. And by the way, sorry, I'm not done yet. I'm in a hurry, I guess, apparently. Facebook, too. Let's put my name up. Mark Inocito. MARKINNACITO. Anyway. Thank you and God bless. Take care.